It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go. We are off and running. It's about 2 minutes past the hour. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and HeadOn.live are where we live, despite certain issues that have plagued the websites in the last couple of days. They are being addressed. One has already been addressed, HeadOn.live, and hopefully HeadOn Radio Network as well in short order. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Titanic Tuesday. On the Horn, the 23rd day of January 2018. We are 3 days into the second year of the magistracy of Nectarine Nero. Yes. And you know, every day gets us one day nearer the time when he won't be. And that's a good thing. See? I can do happy stuff, because I am, after all, Bob Kincaid, little ray of sunshine, right? Yes. And so right off the bat, let us do that which is ever so important that we do, and thank the subscribers to the program who help make all of this possible, and that is, in particular, to Stacy in PA. Thank you, Stacy. Thank you very kindly to our old friend, Philip, in Maryland. Thank you, Philip. Thanks to Brenda in Washington. Thank you very kindly, Brenda. And thanks to Joyce. Thanks to Joyce in Washington State. Thank you, one and all. We are very near, very, very near indeed, to being able to do fundraising free radio. We ended the evening last night with a little bit of a shortfall, and that means this evening all we have to finish it all up. Well, last night it would have been 265, but I got a note from Boss Man Wayne, and by golly, it's only 210 now. And that's thanks to Dennis in Ohio and Hung Like Jesus and our dear, dear friend in Brooklyn, Brandon. So thank you very kindly to you for helping us to get ever so much closer. So there it is. If we raise $210 tonight, we're done with fundraising for the month of January. All we'll do for the rest of the month is thank the subscribers who are there each and every day, because I've calculated based on last month, you count up all the subscribers, and then work backwards to how many days we can go with zero fundraising appeals whatsoever. So we knock that out. We're cool. And, of course, the PayPal interface is over at headon.live. And until, you know, we get the other things sorted out. I checked earlier, but let me look again just to make sure. It's always good to work that out. Yep, still not. Okay. Still working on that issue. But anyway, that's where we are. 21 at 10, 10 at 21, 1 at 210, 2 at 105, 4 at 5250, 26 and a quarter, 8. And, because, you know, the rounding up and the Gulf Stream and the... You know, I don't know. There's a lot of fun gone out of the shtick about the Gulf Stream ever since I saw Kenneth Copeland bragging about his dadgummit. You know, he probably got there in a Maybach, too, or maybe a Ferrari or a Porsche. Oh, well, yeah, so there's that. Of course, there's a merry time to be had in the chat room this evening. If you use the link to that at headon.live, you'll be immediately greeted by Anatole and Kid Mark and Squeaky 41 and Steve from Georgistan, all capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space to become Man Cave. Yes, and it'll just be another Jim Dandy little evening there. So I'm in good form. I'm perky up, ready to roll. It's a lovely 61.5 degrees here at about 6 feet. 6 feet 5, 6 inches off the floor in the fabulous Horn Mansion Studios. And, well, I'm raring to go also because of something the hardworking, peripatetic, periodontic scientists over at Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter, dropped by this morning. I took a big handful of them, and gosh, didn't they make me just feel perky. Bright-eyed and BT, bushy-tailed. That's right. Anonymous Anemone, only from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter, will provide you with a boost you can imagine because you can barely even imagine what's in it in the first place. That's right. Anonymous Anemone from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Is it a weird critter from deep under the sea? Or is it a strange flower? Okay, not so strange. Well, it could be either one, because, of course, it is a bullshit nutritional supplement, just like you've got to have if you want to have a professional radio program. That's right, Anonymous Anemone from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter is absolutely gluten-free, free-range, cage-free, cruelty-free, vegan, non-GMO, and, well, golly Moses, it will get you through your day and do just about anything that you care to imagine that it will. Anonymous Anemone, only from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. And if you act now, seeing as how we have to harvest these things from deep under the sea and from the neighbors flower gardens, only in the spring, and then of course we use a lot of carbon to have anemones flown up from the southern hemisphere during the this part of the year. Well, golly Moses, it can be yours. A 3-month supply. If you act now, you can have a 3-month supply of Anonymous Anemone from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter for the low Horn Nutraceuticals price of $131.15 plus shipping and handling. Jump right on this right now, because if you do, we'll send you a little bundle of test strips so you can find out in the privacy of your own home what we here at Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter, already know, that it has no nutritional value whatsoever, but will make you feel ever so much better because you've just bought a nutritional supplement from a radio program. Anonymous Anemone, only from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Use no hooks, post no bills, this side up, FOB, COD, I can't begin to spell anemone. You'll be glad you did. Meanwhile, just to get things up and running for the evening, let's check in on this day in Horn history. Oh, do let's. For today's edition of This Day in Horn History, we're dialing the Vox Holographic Time Machine 6 years into the past, all the way back to January. See what we did there? All the way back to January the 23rd, 2012. It's Moran Monday on the Horn, and Bob is back from a week of fun and frivolity, hanging out with Guy James and Rick Smith at the Health Action 12 event in Washington, D.C. Oh, those were the days, my friends. We thought they would never end. First up, Moran, according to Bob, is the Comic Relief Act performed by a member of Capital Steps, a political satire group in D.C., who apparently is the subject of Bob's ire for a joke he told between two skits. It was another night in the merciless city. I'd been a long time without work. Why, I'd probably been without work longer than the Tooth Fairy in West Virginia. I remember that, and I'm still pissed. Well, I really can't be pissed now that they published that photo in The Guardian and the UN rapporteur for human rights. Right. And that's when Bob up and walks out, quote, because I don't need that. In retrospect, and with his tongue firmly planted in his cheek, Bob says, maybe I should have stuck around. Maybe they had a couple of really good Jew knee slappers. Next up, Moran nominee is libertarian ophthalmologist Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky, whom, on his way to D.C. to attend a fetus fetish rally, is detained by TSA at the Nashville airport due to an X-ray anomaly in his slacks. Well, that just sounds dirty all by itself, doesn't it? Naturally, Rand and his cranky old pappy Ron take to the Twitter machine to decry the heavy hand of that Obama TSA for impinging on their rights as white or sovereign citizens. Never mind that the TSA came about as a result of Dim Leader W's Patriot Act, etc. et alia. Bob tells a heart-wrenching story of a family cat belonging to a Democratic campaign manager in Arkansas. The cat's found dead, beaten with a baseball bat, his eyeball hanging out of its socket, and the word liberal spray-painted across its corpse. The mixed-breed Siamese cat had one side of its head bashed into the point of the cat's eyeball was barely hanging from its socket, the release said. Later in the program, 2012, Bob poses the question in conversation with a caller. I mean, can you imagine Alex Jones as the White House communications director? I mean, that would drive me to drink. Rot gut. As members of society in the year of our Lord 2018, we're here to tell Bob Kincaid of 2012 vintage that not only can we imagine Alex Jones being the White House Communications Director, we can tell you that he's probably next in line to become the White House Communications Director once Mrs. Trunchbull's is shuffled off the scene. Just ask 2018 Bob. He'll be more than happy to tell you. Alas, 2018 Bob doesn't drink rot gut no more. And that's a look back 6 years into the Horn's past, all the way back to January 23rd, 2012, for This Day in Horn History. I do enjoy the Dickens out of all of that. And by the way, I'm happily told that we are streaming live both over on the White Rose Streams, which means tune in, and all the other associated platforms that go with that, things like Roku. And we're streaming live at HeadOn.live, which means we're streaming live at FYINation.com, and their tune-in page. So, yay! That's a big deal. Jack in Shreveport pointed out HeadOn.live was taking a long time to load, if at all, but White Rose is working. Well, they're working. We've gotten most of that, most of those glitches worked out. Labor man letting us know, still here, can't get into the chat on the Linux machine. Well, I'm sorry, labor man. I wish there was something I could say, but I don't know that that's ever going to get any better. Because apparently Linux doesn't like Java, Java doesn't like Linux, and, well, you know, like Rand Paul and his neighbor, they just don't get along. That's just, I know. Marty still wants me to upgrade the Horn's jet to an Airbus A380. He said there's a few on the used aircraft market, only needing to go through a D-check. Only a couple of hundred million apiece. Well, hell, as my father used to say, write a check! So it is Titanic Tuesday, and we have no small amount of Titanic intellect to display for the evening. But I refuse to be one of those people who allows a story like this to be overshadowed by who did and did not get snubbed in the Oscar nominations, because, of course, the Oscar nominations have about as much relevance to me as fine bone china has out at the hog slop trough. I simply could not care less about anything. You'll notice, could not care less about anything that goes on at just about any awards program. I just, meaningless, no relevance to my life, or for that matter, probably most of ours whatsoever. And so it kind of crawled under my skin a little bit today to see that the hullabaloo raised over who did and who didn't get nominated. And frankly, I don't know. If you call the program later and you want to voice your outrage that Aloysius McGillicuddy was cruelly overlooked for her star turn as an abused circus clown in an English drawing room drama, it's not going to be much of a conversation because, A, I don't know, and B, I don't give a fuck. But on the other hand, there's this. You might recall that in the last week or so, we found out that one of the things that Robert Mueller is looking into is whether it turned out that the nation's most wealthy, most powerful domestic terror organization, that's right, the National Rifle Association, was a pass-through organization for dirty Russian money. Yes, I realize that by mentioning the connection between dirty Russians and dirty Russian money and the Trump campaign, I am displaying for all to hear the fact that I have been thoroughly polarized. But in point of fact, the Russian influence peddling and the Russian money and the Russian oligarchs and the Russian finagling and shenanigans and it's all real. It happened, it's happening, and it's going to happen some more as this year unfolds and after the congressional elections of 2018 will happen some more as we move toward the 2020 presidential elections. The question, of course, being, whatever shall we do about it? We now know, thanks to Joe Biden, we now know that the President Obama tried to do something about it. He wanted to warn the public about what had been identified, the Russian conduct that had been identified in the 2016 election cycle. He badly wanted to. Politico has the story, and what happened was that the White House would circulate a statement about the Russian efforts to monkey in the information wars about that were swirling around the election process. And they circulated the memo, and the memo finally lands on the desk of chinless Mitch McConnell, who refused to sign it. And since, given the political climate in which we live, since Obama understood that it would be seen as a partisan matter, as given that that the Republican Senate Majority Leader wouldn't sign off on it, the memo wasn't issued. You got to wonder why McConnell wouldn't sign. No, you don't. Mitch McConnell has about as much concern. Well, there we go about hogs and troughs again, don't we? Yeah. Moreover, without, according to the Politico article, which is based on things that Joe Biden said, without a bipartisan statement on it, the White House came to the conclusion that it would play into the Russians' hands to have one side complaining about Russian meddling and finagling, and the other side saying, "Huh." And Biden went on to say, can you imagine if the president called a press conference in October with this fellow Bannon and company and said, tell you what, Russians are trying to interfere in our elections and we have to do something about it. What do you think would have happened? Would things have gotten better, or would it have further looked like we were trying to delegitimize the electoral process because of our opponent? In previous reporting, The Atlantic noted with regard to McConnell, the effort was stymied by several Republicans who weren't willing to cooperate, including reportedly Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. That goes back to December 2016. But so it is that today, even though it has been eclipsed, I guess because it happened, we're beyond the 24-hour news cycle. We're beyond the 24-hour news cycle. Now we're in the 24-minute news cycle. Because, see, an act of domestic terrorism took place today. The fact that it was perpetrated by a 15-year-old doesn't change the fact that it was domestic terrorism. A mass shooting took place today at a high school in Marshall County, Kentuckistan. And it happened so early in the day that by the time the Oscar nominations began to get legs and trend, what shooting at what high school? Which, of course, I'm sure thrilled to no end the pass-through patriots there at America's wealthiest, most politically powerful domestic terror organization, namely, and to wit, the National Rifle Association. The facts are as follows. At least one person was killed. No, two people were killed. Two people were killed today at a high school in rural Kentucky, Marshall County High School. A dozen more were wounded when they were shot. Then there were five other people who suffered what are described as non-shooting injuries in the rampage and the screaming madness that followed. Marshall County High School, Benton, Kentucky. Initial reporting says that all of the victims were students. I remember the last time we had a school shooting. This one took place in New Mexico. It was later discovered that the shooter had a sort of a secret life online on pro-Trump white supremacy websites. We wonder, one cannot help but wonder if that will prove the case here as well. The shooter was taken down nonviolently, which means the shooter is, of course, white, and will be charged with murder and attempted murder as a 15-year-old. Seeking to put some sort of, if when you're the governor of a state where one of these entirely predictable events occurs, it sort of comes with the job description that you have to say something about it. And bear in mind, a dozen people are shot, two are dead, wounded. And Matt Bevin, whose previous claim to fame as governor of Kentucky stand is that he was elected by people, poor people went to the polls to elect him upon his promise that he would take their Kenyan Muslim usurper health care away so that they could be, they could bask in their freedom and you know, go and die quickly. Well, Matt Bevin issued a statement. He said, "This is a wound that will take a long time to heal." Then whoever was typing that said, "For some in this community, it'll never heal." Well, thanks for adding in the people who were whose children were killed and the people whose children were shot and wounded. The shooting started at 7:57 a.m. Central Time. Kids were milling around in the commons area of the high school, waiting for the bell to ring to go to their first class of the day. At 7:59 a.m., the 911 call was made, or at least the first one, and the police showed up at 8:06 a.m., at which point they took the shooter into custody, again using Matt Bevin's words, in a nonviolent apprehension. A 15-year-old little girl died at the scene, and a 15-year-old little boy died later at the hospital. Jeff Edwards is the Marshall County attorney. He said it didn't appear that anyone specifically had been targeted. And he said, "To walk in, the backpack's laying around, the phone's laying around, going off, it's indescribable. I've been doing this for 25 years. It's not like anything I've experienced in my life." It was that reference to the cell phones laying around going off that sort of stopped me for a second. Every mama, every daddy, some brothers, some sisters, perhaps some aunts, uncles, cousins, friends. Once they hear the news that there's been a shooting at their local high school, they begin calling to make sure that the person they're trying to reach isn't dead. Two of those phones will never be answered again. A dozen more couldn't be answered at the time because those students had already been shot. And so I can understand the sentiment of Marshall County Attorney Jeff Edwards when he says, it's not like anything I've experienced in my life. But the thing is, it was something that getting up and going to work every day, he had to take into account. Whether you're a governor or a prosecutor, county attorney, a cop, a firefighter, an EMS technician, paramedic, at some point in time, you have to wonder, how will I behave? How will I perform? What will it be like when something like that comes to me? And it's almost a horror too great to fully process. There are less than 5,000 people in Benton, Kentucky. It's about 120 miles northwest of Nashville. A number of the victims were, in fact, taken to hospital at Vanderbilt University. There are 1,374 students at Marshall County High School, as it sounds as though it's probably the only high school in the county. At some point in time, consolidation having been affected. It is 35 miles southeast of Heath High School in West Paducah, Kentucky. It was there on December the 1st, 1997, that Michael Carneal opened fire on a group of students who the article makes a point of noting were praying. He killed three people and wounded five others. Naturally, Republican Representative James Comer immediately knew how he would perform on such a day because he tweeted out, thoughts and prayers, thoughts and prayers, thoughts and prayers, thoughts and prayers. My thoughts and prayers go out to the students and faculty at Marshall County High School, where there has been a tragic school shooting. Yeah, I don't know if I'm up to discussing the use of the word tragic in that context. Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul, who managed to be mentioned on this day in Horn history, each said, our hearts were with the entire community of Marshall County. And we're monitoring reports from the scene, and we thank our first responders. Then there was the statement. Then there was the statement from Matt Bevin. And this is the one that makes you miss the tequila bottle. This is a tremendous tragedy and speaks to the heartbreak present in our communities. Can we take a second, please? What does that even mean? That two murdered children and 12 shot children speaks to the heartbreak present in our communities? I mean, for a minute, we'll just kind of blow past the "this is a tremendous tragedy" part. What does that mean? Speaks to the heartbreak present in our communities. Okay, well, maybe the next sentence will make a little more sense of that, because that's just word stew. It is unbelievable that this would happen in a small, close-knit community like Marshall County. No! No! Bullshit! I call bullshit, I mean, a great, big, giant, 50-foot, on-a-hillside letters, bullshit! That this is unbelievable. Of course, Matt Bevin's a Republican. That means he has to say something like, this is unbelievable. Because after all, I'm pretty sure that that wasn't a, you know, the work still has to be done and the forensics and whatnot. But there's an almost 100% likelihood that the weapon in question was legally purchased and legally owned before it was illegally used by the shooter in this case. Don in West Tennessee, offering a little bit of context, says, Benton's about an hour from me. Unbelievable. But yes, I recall the same thing in Paducah about 2 years before Columbine. It was a couple of years after. But yes, Don, yes. And sadly, it isn't unbelievable. It is all too believable. It is... We struggle for words in one of these events because unbelievable, unfathomable, unimaginable. Here in the last couple of years of the second decade of the 21st century, it is fathomable, it is believable, and it is imaginable. That was what I was getting at when I said if you're a first responder or a cop or a school principal or a teacher, you have to wonder, what happens when it comes to us? When what comes to us? When the pointer on the NRA's roulette wheel of death comes to us. When it spins and spins and spins and spins and click, 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 Benton, Kentucky. Because henceforward, hell, I think I've probably already said this, at some point Ace is going to run across one of these in this day in Horn history. But this is the United States of America. Children being murdered. Children being shot on a mass scale is not only predictable, it is reasonably foreseeable. And in particular, because people like Mitch McConnell want to make sure that it remains both not only predictable, but reasonably foreseeable. Because again, that's not going to prove to be some weapon that was printed out on a 3D printer. It's not going to be old great-grandpappy's Confederate Civil War musket that he fired and reloaded and fired and reloaded and fired and reloaded. It's going to be just another gun. Just another gun, like any gun that you can buy more easily in the United States than you can get a goddamn fishing license. Under the subject line, they haven't gotten around, Ron in Raleigh says, when are they going to get around to blaming Barack Obama? Everything else is his fault. Oh, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. If we hadn't had to have that Kenyan Muslim you slurper in our White House, we wouldn't have so much of this here economic anxiety going on. For a fact. But I read that from Matt Bevin, and it is unbelievable that this would happen in a small, close-knit community like Marshall County. As there is still much unknown, I encourage people to love on each other at this time. Love on? What, you've been reading the Stormy Daniels stories there, Matt? Love on each other? Nah, hillbillies say that. They was just loving on. You know what? They got done with fellowship dinner, and it was so good that they all went back and loved on the little old blue-haired ladies in the fellowship hall kitchen. Unbelievable. We're gonna need some new language. How about unpreventable? That is a conversation we can have. Was this preventable? No, it wasn't. But Bob, common sense gun laws would... And there's the problem. It wasn't preventable because America's most powerful, wealthiest domestic terror organization does not permit us to have anything even in the same area code as common sense gun laws. Did the killer, the 15-year-old killer, did he get it out of Daddy's Freedom Protector safe? Maybe Mama and Daddy just keep them there in a glass case, proudly displayed. Maybe the case has a "Don't Tread on Me" flag in it as well, just to remind everybody that they got all them guns there in the house for when the jackbooted government comes to put their jackboots on their freedom-loving necks, right next to the tattoo that says, "Only God can judge me." Kitty in Boston gets it. Kitty says, "It's not unbelievable, Bob. It's just fucking Tuesday in America." Yeah. While back, I used to have this thing that I would do when we'd talk about some asshole with the gun, where I'd turn on the reverb and holler, "Wolverines!" in open mockery of the incredibly stupid 1980s paranoid Reagan-esque film. Oh, God, what was the name of the movie? It's plumb evaded me. But the little insurgent group that was fighting off the hordes of Cubans and North Koreans or whatever. Red Dawn. Thank you, Steve, from Georgia Stan. Well, whenever there was one scene where the kid was standing there with his semi-automatic rifle shooting at a Soviet helicopter gunship coming at him, and it just chewed the shit out of him when he was hollering, "Wolverines!" Yeah. Steve asking, Steve in New York, isn't it time we call the NRA the American Bureau of the Russian GRU? Yeah, it is. But it's well past time that we call the NRA blood-sodden pimps for mass murder. But we don't do that either. Because part of being the most powerful domestic terror organization in the United States is the other component where they're also the wealthiest. And, you know, if you call them the Russian Bureau of the GRU, or if you call them blood-sodden pimps for murder, well, then they probably won't give you one of them big old money checks to put in your campaign, your campaign slush fund account, and they won't contribute to your re-election campaign, and they won't contribute to your PAC, and they won't pass out great briefcases full of the dark money. Yeah. Somebody needs to tell the Matt Bevins of the world never to describe an incident of mass murder in the United States as unbelievable. Now, if there was a mass murder involving firearms and it happened in the United Kingdom, or it happened in Australia, or it happened in Japan, or it happened in, Germany or Sweden, it happened in Norway. And in those instances, yeah, it was unbelievable. Because unbelievable implies a certain degree of rarity, scarcity. This is not that. Not at all. And suffice to say that we really don't need any more thoughts and prayers. We got more thoughts and prayers than we can handle. What we need is action. What we need is some sort of action taken. And please believe me when I say it's not going to help to do something about video games or the medications. We got to do something about the guns. How did a 15-year-old get a firearm? Well, let's start with the fact that the NRA encourages children to learn how to shoot. That the NRA promotes firearms as an intergenerational sporting and political experience. That's a place to start. Who else gets quoted in this news story? National PTA President Jim Accomando. He expressed condolences. He put out a statement that said families and educators and school administrators and community leaders and elected officials must work together to prevent gun violence in schools and ensure all students can learn in a safe environment. Particularly, he said, any act of violence at a school or involving children and youth is intolerable, and no parent should fear for the safety of their child every time they leave home. Well, you didn't say it, I reckon. I don't have the full statement in front of me. But here's the thing, Mr. Accomando. As long as the National Rifle Association exists, parents will fear for the safety of their child every time they leave home. And if they don't, they're either negligent or deluding themselves. Just because of the news, what was in the news today, I went out to run errands earlier, and as I pulled into the driveway, I heard the diesel roar of the school bus as it went out our road. And I turned to look at it at the end of the school day. And it was kind of a bittersweet little moment. Because as it blew on past our driveway, I couldn't help but think about all the times that it had stopped at our driveway. And the doors had opened. And four beautiful children, ours, had jumped off the bus and come running to us. And other people's kids, too, who stayed here and played until Mommy and Daddy could come and pick them up. And to no one and nothing in particular, I thought how, and again, you get challenged for words, how fortunate we were. Believers in deities would say how blessed we were. But that didn't change the fact that we did worry. We spent a lot of time worrying, and with good reason. It's bizarre as one grows older to watch people grow into adulthood whom once you saw in kindergarten and first grade classrooms with little smiling faces. And you see them now having become felons, attempted murderers, addicts, dead. It is weird in the extreme. Gabby Giffords, formerly a member of the House of Representatives, who came very close to being a dead person, thanks to the NRA, said, our nation's schools should be some of the safest spaces in our communities. Why do we keep allowing this terror to happen? Congress can protect our kids in their classrooms, in the cafeteria, and on the playground, but to do that, they must strengthen our gun laws. Which is another way of saying, Congress isn't going to do jack shit. Not this Congress, not this majority. Here's another one of those little intersectional moments where, contrary to all too many people, you can say, yeah, voting matters. I'll bet you in any given congressional district that you care to examine, you'll find that the person occupying that congressional seat, that House seat, was not elected by a majority of the registered voters in that district. Not that there were two or three candidates and no, and they got a plurality and got in. No. But a majority or the person who was elected got in because people stayed home. I have triggered the wellsprings of memory. Don in West Tennessee says, when I was a kid, recall zip guns. When I was a kid, another kid flashed a homemade zip gun on the school bus on the way to school. It was fashioned with a wooden stock, and the barrel was a piece of car radio antenna and some heavy rubber bands. 22 caliber was the bullet. Freaked me out. This was the late 50s outside of D.C. Always wondered where that kid ended up. Marty, with a note, says, rarity, scarcity. Other there? Yes, here. What did Nicole Sandler say earlier? Ninth school shooting in 23 days? It is still January. Meanwhile, Steve from New York, what can we do? I'm not sure what we can do because it seems that no matter how much the public polls indicate the majority wants something done, nothing happens. Short of surrounding the NRA and the Capitol and White House with 100,000 people, ain't shit gonna happen. You know what we need to do, Bob? We need to scare the shit out of the NRA. They need to be terrified every time they walk out their doors, not out of fear for their lives, but out of fear that huge crowds will surround them wherever they go. Yeah, nobody's hurting more people is not a solution to people being hurt. But to drive the NRA from tolerated space to render it ineffectual, that is an admirable goal. 100,000 people around the White House and the Capitol would not be a terrible idea. But that what Steve brings up reminds me of something I saw this morning. Toward the very end of that program, my vile, dirty little habit in the morning, they brought on some former congressman who is some sort of a president or something of some group whose apparent focus in life is to propel, and as Dim Leader said back during the Reign of Error, catapult the propaganda that both sides do it. And from about 8:45 a.m. Eastern Time, which would be scant minutes before a young man would start shooting in Benton, Kentucky, to pretty nearly the end of the program. Well, this guy was a colleague of Joe Scarborough's back when they were, participants in Newt Gingrich's Contract on America. And they sat there talking about how bizarre it is that now the Gingrich-Clinton years are the good old days. And then they lapsed into a hopeless celebration, exegesis of both-siderism. That somehow the political problems that this country faces are a matter of both sides do it. That Democrats who want to bring certainty and end the vicious cruelty with which children who were brought here through no fault of their own are threatened with being thrown out of the only country they've ever known, that somehow that there is equal culpability to be found in that position alongside the other side, the Republicans, the good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing followers of Christ, who want the lot of them thrown out of this country. Because God is love, y'all. And it is simply not true. There is not a damn thing that happened on the Democratic side of the recently concluded shutdown, which bargain reopening the government is going to be proven to have been a fool's bargain by February the 8th, because nobody consulted the House of Representatives, which is in a perpetual state of hostage crisis because of the Freedom Caucus, which owns Paul Ryan, who recently did better to the tune of about $500,000, thanks to the Koch brothers after the tax bill passed. Nobody consulted the Freedom Caucus, and the Freedom Caucus has already been, members of the Freedom Caucus have already been quoted saying, well, hell no, we're not bringing up no goddamn DACA bill before February 8th. Why in the hell should we? We got what we wanted, and we'll get what we want again. And later on, we'll get what we want some more. Because we got the balls of the Speaker of the House in a vice. And all we have to do is walk up and flick him. And oh, you should hear him scream. Maybe I got a little bit far afield. But the side that says that we need to do something about the proliferation and easy access to firearms in this country, well, they are not equally guilty with the side that says, well, you know, I mean, we got our Second Amendment, we got our freedom out there, and, you know, every now and then you're just going to have to water the tree of liberty with the blood of 15-year-olds on their way to first period biology. It is, as Thomas Jefferson said, it is its natural manure. That's what you got there, spilling out all over the floors of Marshall County High School in Kentucky. That's what you got. You got yourself some freedom, natural, tree of liberty, natural manure. Dad, you betcha you do. Vote, damn it. Vote. Now, I understand we have to be ever so solicitous of the tender, soft, warm, ever so easily wounded feelings of the pasty-faced, doughy white people who have to have guns in order to feel like they're really Merkins. And so, consequently, you know, we can't be talking about closing the gun show loophole or the fact that there is not a single solitary, ordinary person in the entire United States of America who needs access to an AR-15 or an AK-47. Because That'll make the pasty-faced, doughy white people cry. And it'll upset Wayne LaPierre something fierce. And he might even have to get on the phone to Uncle Pooty Poot and cry on his shoulders. Hung Like Jesus with an observation says, Bob, my cousins and I grew up in D.C. during the height of the crack epidemic and made it through without a scratch. My cousin goes to Chicago last year and is shot dead the first night he's there. I don't know what that means, except now you'll get shot today for zero reason. There was apparently no reason for the two kids who got shot, the little boy and the little girl, today in Benton, Kentucky. Except for the fact that another kid went to school and apparently wanted to see the effect of bullets on human flesh. After a while, those targets out at the range, they just don't have the same satisfaction shooting at rings with numbers on, even when it's a silhouette of a person. Just doesn't have the same gravitas. But as to Chicago, I can tell you what that means. That means that in Talibandiana and rural parts of Illinois and up into Wisconsin, that the determination to make sure that firearms are easier to obtain than fishing licenses means that no matter how strict the gun laws enacted by the city of Chicago are, guns are going to flood the streets there. By the way, just to sort of throw this out there for general consideration, we talked about how if you cannot keep the empire trundling from one year to the next and instead have to do it in three-week fits and starts, that's a pretty good indication that you're circling the drain. Well, so too is the fact that you can't find your way clear to take war weapons off the commercial market in your empire. Because it means exactly that. Matt in San Francisco wants to know, can't we go back to shunning? I mean, why else have Wyoming? They can all take each other out and leave the rest of us alone. I don't know how you're going to fit that many rednecks in one state, Matt. Sure would make places like Alabama and Georgia and Kentucky and West Virginia nicer places, though, wouldn't it? Yeah. But there's your answer. Vote, goddammit. Make it personal. Vote as if your life depends upon it. Because either yours or someone whom you love does depend on it. Now we have to take into account that different parts of the country think differently about different issues. But there are very few parts of this country where, if there was a determined effort, it could not be the gun fetishists could not be overcome. You get yourself a veto-proof majority in the Senate and get yourself a majority in the House, and you can do just about anything you want to do. And then you have to protect it. In the final analysis, it comes down to civic participation. I'm about to ask a question whose answer I do not know. In the one-year anniversary march over the weekend, I saw some coverage of it. Saw a lot of signs. My favorite one came from the Women's March in Denver. Beautiful little girl holding up a sign said, "You build a wall, and my generation will tear it down." Gave me chills. Is this something that we just have to wait for the next generation to fix? If that's the case, it sure does seem like we are filling up the plate in a real hurry for that little for my granddaughter's generation and my grandson's generation and that little girl in Denver. We're loading it up to just about where they won't be able to carry it to the table. Because they're gonna have to fix immigration. They're gonna have to tear down the wall. They're gonna have to take care of the gun problem. And along the way, mourn their own friends and loved ones who were killed because we didn't. My God, they're gonna have to fix the sea level rise issue. They're going to have to fix the disruption of the weather. This does not bode well for a country in which state legislatures are proposing bills requiring the reading of the Ten Commandments in class every day, or, as is the case in West Virginia, a bill that would require that the Bible be taught as literature in every school, in every county, in the entire state of West Virginia. Does not bode well at all. And so, as a consequence, I think we would do well to consider, what can we do? Can we start on some of this so that that generation doesn't have quite so much to deal with? Because I've got a pretty solid sense that they're going to be pretty damned busy. And if we could just check a couple of boxes on the list for them, they might actually look back with some degree of fondness upon us instead of spitting on the ground at the mention of our names. Because right now they're going to spit their mouths dry. And I can't see any way forward except to take the people who are keeping us from doing anything about these problems, to take away from them the levers of power. What do you say about a congressional majority that knew for a year that the CHIP program, you know, to provide health insurance to those same little kids that I was mentioning a few minutes ago, knew for a year that it was going to expire and just, ho-hum. Yeah, I'm sorry, we've got to have more hearings on her email. And then let it expire. And then did nothing. Oh, but now they're terribly proud of themselves because they've given the kids 6 years of insurance. Golly, Sergeant Carter, a baby born today is going to have health care all the way to first grade. Hoo-wee! Somebody find Lee Greenwood and set him to singing about God bless the USA. Shazam! Let's see, here's the problem. If this was... If this was an all-white country, we wouldn't have problem number one sorting out a permanent solution to the funding of CHIP. If every person in this country drawing Social Security was as white as a freshly fallen snow, not a peep would ever be uttered about Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid or SNAP benefits. Arguably, the fascination with firearms has an ethnic component to it. Because it goes all the way back to the bowel-watering fear of the white slave owners that one of these days the people that they were working to death might get pissed off enough to come and slaughter them in their sleep. And it lingers to this day. But the question I was asking earlier, I did not see... Was there a concerted was there a devoted presence at the Women's March? Because I did not see it, and I'm not being an asshole about it. I just didn't see it of women marching and demanding an end to the slaughter. You know, even as almost, I think even as we speak, there's a gun group having one of its gun orgies not at all far from where the Las Vegas massacre took place last fall. Brother Deacon Asa says, regarding if this was an all-white country, and by God, the Carantine Caligula is working on that something fierce, so there's hope that the gun problem will be solved at some point. Yeah, hope in one hand. If the immigration problem was white immigrants, they would have a path to citizenship. That was 8 lanes wide and built for speed. And when I say that the problem is insoluble, my assertion that the problem with guns is insoluble is based upon the fact that it doesn't seem to matter what the opinion and will of the American people is, it's not going to happen because we are in thrall to the aforementioned most powerful, wealthiest domestic terror organization in the United States, the National Rifle Association. A very specific, granular campaign against the NRA's most hardcore adherence is called for. But it has to be done in such a way that it will appeal to the individual voters. It does not do you any good to run somebody who sounds like he just walked out of South Boston in South Boston, Kentucky. And I'm not picking on Boston. Because, frankly, if you took somebody from Concord, Georgia, and ran them in Concord, Massachusetts, you wouldn't have any luck there either. I don't even know if there's a Concord, Georgia. It's a statehouse thing. Overwhelm the NRA with lawsuits. Make the NRA sue every state in the union for every gun law that gets that gets passed. But there will be no immediate solution to the problem because we are not permitted to have one. Clarity, by way of offering up some perspective, says, this is what the Trumpansies are saying to Jeff Merkley on Facebook. Thanks for choosing illegal aliens over children's health. So the GOP is really messaged well. So now justice making is satanic and evil. Justice making is as satanic and evil as communism. Or there's something that Carol Baker shared with me earlier. It was interesting because it featured a political candidate from West Virginia. Her name's Marianne Clater. And someone asked her on Facebook, do you support America's president? And she responded, I thought, quite appropriately, because she is a person of faith. She's a very religious person, which is fine, as long as she doesn't try to make everybody else be that way. I respect the office, but I try not to put my faith in man, but in God. To which a Trumpansee immediately jumped in and responded, that's a great non-answer or squirting of the question. You're ready to be a government official. And bless her heart, and I mean that in a good way, not the Southern way, Carol responded, still trying to figure out how one is guilty of, quote, squirting of the question. The guy who made that statement was Mike Fielder. Mike Fielder's ready to be a Fox News host. You come here trolling, ask a woman of color if she supports the racist in chief. I thought her answer was respectful and honest. I'm not that thoughtful. Hell no, I don't support him. He's a disgrace to all that's decent. Back to the Weather Channel now with Stormy Daniels. Stormy, take it away. It's like that all over the country. The Trumpansies are emboldened and feeling their oats. So that, and it gets worse. Consider, for instance, and it will get even worse than worse. The President of the United States is involved in this shit. You remember when he posted the video of him beating the shit out of a CNN news logo or a CNN news logo being hit by a train, that sort of thing? Or how about the tweet from December 9th, 2017, where he said, CNN slogan is CNN, the most trusted name in news. Everyone knows this is not true, that this could in fact be a fraud on the American public. There are many outlets that are far more trusted than fake news CNN. Their slogan should be CNN, the least trusted name in news. Mm-hmm. On and on and on. He's got a particular animus for CNN. And it's paying off. It's paying dividends. CBS 46 in Atlanta. Broadcast a story yesterday that a 19-year-old man from Norrie, Michigan, by name Brandon Griesmer, G-R-I-E-S-E-M-E-R, in the space of a two-day period about a week ago, allegedly made more than 20 calls to the CNN switchboard. In one of the calls, he told the switchboard operator, "You're fake news." On another occasion, he said, "Fake news, I'm coming to gun you all down. Fuck you fucking niggers." In others of the 20 calls, he made homophobic slurs and threats. And anti-Semitic threats. The charges he faces can carry up to 20 years in prison for those threats to murder CNN employees. I suspect the charges are federal in nature because there was a crossing of state lines and interstate commerce via the phone lines and so forth. An investigation was performed. The calls were traced back to the house that Griesmer shares with his parents. He's 19 years old. He's a white guy in Michigan. He has a previous history last year of making threatening phone calls to an Islamic center. Yeah. No word on whether firearms were removed from the house. But we do know that upon being charged, the court a U.S. magistrate, because it was investigated by the FBI.
Fucking FBI.
Approximately 22 total calls to CNN between January 9th and January 10th. In the last call he made, he said, "You're going down. I have a gun, and I'm coming to Georgia right now to go to the CNN headquarters to fucking gun every single last one of you. I have a team of people. It's going to be great, man. You got to be prepared for this one, buddy." Now, what the Washington Post doesn't tell us, in his exact words, were the references he made to the people who were Jewish that he was directing that threat toward. The charges are interstate communications with intent to extort, threaten, or injure. He showed up in court for his initial appearance, his arraignment, as we say around here, on the 19th of January. At which point, the United States magistrate, lifetime appointed, released him on an unsecured $10,000 bond. The Washington Post then reached out to Griezmer's father and said, quote, "This whole thing has been a mistake. He really didn't mean any of it. He didn't know what he was saying, the seriousness of it. We're not even gun owners or anything like that. We don't have any. Neither does he. More will come out later. Hopefully this can be settled." "You don't have any guns, do you, sir? And neither does he. Guess what, sir? He can get one in a minute, because this is Merca. The greatest country in the history of the world, on earth, in the universe, today, under God." Oh, and by the way, Wolverines! Yeah. $10,000 unsecured bond. I guess the magistrate, he's 19 years old, and the way that that's presented, one is led to infer, and one does this at one's peril, that maybe 19-year-old Mr. Griezmer isn't all home. I take that from the statement, he didn't know what he was saying, the seriousness of it. So he just sits and he watches the President of the United States shriek about fake news and give out fake news awards. And he hears day after day the economically anxious people talk about how everything about him, from the whoremongering to the payoffs to the Russians to the shithole nations and all the Haitians have AIDS and the Nigerians won't go back to their huts and we're going to make Mexico pay for the wall. And he has no ability to separate truth from falsity. He has no ability to tell the difference between a guy who used to show up on the professional wrestling from the same guy who now has the power to incinerate the planet. Marty asking, Caligula versus CNN, what gives with this? Did Caligula not get along with Ted Turner or something? No. Ted was out of the picture a long time before this. No, this goes back to a spat with upper management. And meanwhile, Barbecue Todd, subject line, POTUS tweets, "It has come to my attention that the First Lady has a program to fight cyberbullying. Has she invited her husband to a seminar? Just curious." Yeah, he wouldn't show up unless there were porn stars there. Bill in Allentown says, "Does it feel like 1930s Germany to you, Bob?" It's starting to feel like 1930s Germany to me. I wasn't there. All I can do is compare to history. But it does. But you know what it feels more like? It feels like America, Bill. It feels like America when the Klan roamed free and marched 20,000 at a time down Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C. It feels like the America where Father Coughlin, night after night, railed against Jews and Jew bankers and the coloreds. And the, well, not the Catholics, Father Coughlin, but you get the idea. My, oh, my, oh, my, what a little filibobster this turned into. It's 7:35. Do you suppose we should do some conversation radio? Should I open the phone lines? Or should we just keep marching through the madness? You tell me. We'll take a break. Do let's. And see if anybody wants to talk. By the way, new callers are always welcome. If you've always been afraid of calling a radio program, this is the program to call fearlessly. Because we're gentle and easy. It's easy to talk here. So if you've never tried, jump right in. But all are welcome, of course. And well, doggone it, try it out, or try it again. You know how, right? 304-574-8178. Or from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, will get you into the program. It's all terribly easy. You know, there are so many people I hear from on email, on Messenger, Twitter, things like that. Never hear from you on the phone. It would be fun. I would enjoy it, and I suspect a lot of people would as well. But it's all up to you. If you don't want to, well, send me another email. That's cool, too. I love the emails. And I got a dandy here from Steve on the Gulf Coast that I'm going to share out of the break. And with that being the case, we're never going to be out of the break until I take it. You know, I mentioned that we started the program with a $210 fundraising goal to finish up fundraising and go forward with nothing but fundraising-free broadcasting for the remainder of the month. And so far, an hour and 38 minutes into the program, we're at zero. So that being the case, it would be great if... if we could take a bite out of that. All right, then. Break time. And, of course, it's Tuesday, so that means we also have the Green News Report, courtesy of Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. We'll enjoy all of that and get back to your calls, my filibobstering, or however it all happens to play out. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn.
I lit up from Reno, I was trailed by 20 hounds. That night till the morning came around. Set out running, but I take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. I get home before daylight, just might get some sleep tonight. Ran into the devil, baby, lonely 20 bills. Spent the night in Utah in a cave up in the hills. Set out running, but I take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. I get home before daylight, just might get some sleep tonight. I ran down to the levee, but the devil caught me there. Took my $20 bill and it vanished in the air.
I'm running, but take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. I get home before daylight, just might get some sleep tonight. Got two reasons why I cry awake, lonely night. The first one's named Sweet Anne-Marie, and she's my heart's delight. Second one is prison baby, the sheriff's on my trail. And if he catches up with me, I'll spend my life in jail. Got a wife in Chino, baby, and one in Cherokee. First one says she got my child, but it don't look like me. Said I'll run, but I'll take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. I get home before daylight, just might get some sleep tonight.
It's Tuesday, January 23, 2018.
We have five that are confirmed missing.
Explosion at Oklahoma natural gas rig.
We can't wait another month.
Treasury Department withholds disaster funds from Puerto Rico. Trump slaps big tariffs on solar panels imported from China. Plus, keeping national parks open during a government shutdown? Incredibly idiotic, says former director of national parks.
All of that incredible idiocy and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Trump is the only person who watched Deepwater Horizon and cheered for the oil. He's like, come on, Slick, you can do it!
This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, another day, another fossil fuel disaster.
Yes, unfortunately, five rig workers are missing in eastern Oklahoma after the natural gas drilling rig they were working on exploded on Monday, destroying the rig and engulfing their entire work site in flames. 20 rig workers were rescued, but in a press conference, Pittsburgh County, Oklahoma emergency manager Kevin Enlow said emergency crews had to be pulled back due to multiple other explosions at the site where several fuel storage tanks are also located.
We're not trying to put water on it and spread the hazmat, if you will, because there's going to be lots of contaminants on location. So they're not pumping water on it at this time. We're just letting the fire run its course.
The Trump administration on Monday announced it would impose a steep 30% tariff on imported solar panels from China after the U.S. International Trade Commission ruled last year that China had flooded the U.S. market with imported panels. That drove the expansion of solar energy in the United States, but it undercut domestic manufacturers. The U.S. Solar Energy Industries Association warns the new tariffs will raise the cost of solar energy installations and slow the spread of renewable energy, harming the U.S. industry as a whole, because they say the vast majority of the nation's solar jobs are now in installation.
You would think that the solar industry here in the U.S. would be delighted about these tariffs, but A, there already are tariffs on Chinese panels, and B, the industry says it's going to cost as many as 23,000 American jobs.
The Trump administration Department of Homeland Security on Monday also officially waived dozens of environmental regulations in order to speed up construction of Trump's proposed wall on the U.S.-Mexico border.
Of course they did.
The waiver excludes the construction from major laws, including the National Environmental Policy Act, the Endangered Species Act, the Clean Water Act, the National Historic Preservation Act, and the Antiquities Act, among others.
Laws. Who needs them?
The temporary shutdown of the federal government ended on Monday when Senate Democrats joined Republicans to pass temporary stopgap legislation to fund the government for 3 weeks. Now, unlike during past shutdowns, the Trump administration chose to keep national parks open during the short shutdown without park staff or even open bathrooms in a public relations move to avoid angering the public. Former National Park Service Director Jonathan Jarvis, however, called keeping the parks open without staff, quote, incredibly idiotic and a move that could endanger public safety.
And it's interesting, you know, that the national parks are the first thing that the Republicans always wish to cut, to trim back, to lease out to oil drilling and logging interests. But when it comes to the shutdowns, they don't want to close those parks because they know that with the American people, these national parks are wildly popular.
With the government now reopened, Democratic Senator Ben Cardin of Maryland called for an immediate push for new additional disaster relief funding for Americans still struggling with the record number of billion-dollar extreme weather disasters from last year.
Many of my colleagues have talked about disaster relief. We certainly need to give help to the communities of Texas and Florida, the Puerto Rico, the wildfires of the West. We know that we got to get that done now. We can't wait another month.
Speaking of disaster relief, in Puerto Rico, more than a million Americans are still without electricity, more than 4 months after Hurricane Maria hit. However, the Trump administration, Treasury Department, and FEMA have denied funds to the island from a billion-dollar emergency loan that was approved by Congress last year. The agencies are withholding the loan money on technical grounds that Puerto Rico currently has too much cash on hand and is therefore not poor enough to qualify for cash disbursement of the loan funds for operating expenses.
Incredible.
Also, it's important to note that Texas and Florida received federal grants for their hurricane disaster relief. Only Puerto Rico was saddled with a loan that must be repaid.
Because we all know that Puerto Ricans really aren't real U.S. citizens, right?
At least not in the mind of Donald Trump.
Apparently so. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I like to be in America. Okay, by me in America. Everything free in America.
For a small fee in America.
Okay. Show tunes.
It's about 11 minutes before the hour. This is the horn for Titanic Tuesday, the 23rd of January, 2018. Let's run down Georgia way and see what's cooking. Hey, welcome to the program. You're on. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, hey.
Hey, this is Elmer from Rhode Island.
Oh, Albert, I'm sorry. I was looking. I thought you were in Georgia. I'm sorry. My bad. Well, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you.
I've been listening to you since they had that big disaster. I think it's in West Virginia where they had that big tank leak.
Oh yeah, the Freedom disaster. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I've been listening to you since then, and I really enjoy your program.
Well, thank you so much. I'm glad that you do, and I appreciate the call.
But I'd love to find out how a congressman would react if he got a phone call telling him there was a shooting at your daughter's high school.
Yeah, would he just tweet out thoughts and prayers?
I'd love to hear that.
Hey, Albert, could you do me one favor? There's audio playing in the background. If you could turn that down, it'll make our conversation a whole lot easier.
Okay. I would just love to see how I'd react to that.
Yeah, you'd hate for something like that to happen, but by the same token, it would be interesting to know.
Hello.
Yeah, you're there. You're here. It would be interesting to see if the reaction would change if it was actually someone they cared about.
Yeah. Because, that's what I just wanted to mention.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, you have a good evening.
All right, you too, Albert. Good to hear from you. I enjoy your
Bye.
Emails. Thanks a bunch. Bye now. It's a good point. You don't even like to contemplate something as painful as that. But what happens when it's real? Well, I mean, we get a pretty good idea. And I hate to even talk like this, but, you know, we had the shooting last July in which noted Republican and Freedom Caucus member and Klan sympathizer Steve Scalise came near to being killed. And he was saved by a lesbian police officer, a married lesbian police officer, and it didn't change him one iota. He still thinks there's not enough guns in America in enough hands, you know, white hands. And he's still not real sure whether or not the gays really need all them constitutional rights. Look, the fact of the matter is the Republican Party is perfectly happy to put our children on the altar of their political ambitions. And it is not, and both sides don't, damned well don't do it. That's what it is and where it is. Consider, if you will, because we all kind of need something that passes for a giggle once in a while. Consider Representative Patrick Meehan, a Republican from Pennsylvania. This past Saturday, there was a story pretty rich in detail in the New York Times about complaints that he had sexually harassed a former aide in his office. Okay, so this is a dog bites man story. I mean, what's new about a member of Congress, especially a Republican member of Congress, being all pervy? I mean, after all, we have a president of the United States who paid a porn star $130,000 to keep quiet about her sexual liaison with him going back to when his little baby boy was 4 years old and his baby mama was desperately trying to get back into shape after the pregnancy because he had told her, "You better get back into shape or you're out of here." Really? Well, here's what's different about it. We have a new defense. A little bit ago, was it Ron and Raleigh? I think it was Ron and Raleigh. A little bit ago, Ron and Raleigh wrote to say that they haven't gotten around to blaming Barack Obama for the shooting today. Everything else is his fault. Yes, Ron, yes it is, because in responding today to the allegations of sexual harassment and sexual abuse, he said, Patrick Meehan did, that what he did was wrong, but it wasn't sexual harassment. He gave an interview to the Philadelphia Inquirer, which took a few minutes from celebrating the NFC Championship of the Philadelphia Eagles to pay attention to this story. He said, in talking to the Philadelphia Inquirer, he said that, well, yeah, he had expressed his feelings to the member of his staff. And he said that he had behaved in a manner that was selfish when he found out she was in a relationship. But he said it still wasn't sexual harassment. And that's when everything went sideways. He said he lashed out at her because, and this is a quote, get the hockey puck. I mean, no, there's no audio to go with this, but get the hockey puck. You might want it. He said, sometimes I have the tendency to lash out to others on the staff. And you go hardest on the ones you care the most about, the goddess of irony making him say you go the hardest. And it turns out that he was lashing out at members of his staff because Obamacare. That's right. Obamacare caused Republican Patrick Meehan of Pennsylvania to sexually harass, allegedly, a female member of his staff. He also doesn't deny that taxpayer money was used to come up with a settlement when she brought a formal complaint against him last year. Yeah. That's right. Yes. I lashed out. I behaved selfishly. I told her how I felt, but then I found out she was in a relationship, but I cared deeply about her, and I wouldn't have lashed out except for Obamacare. Because I was under terrible pressure from constituents during the debate over the repeal of the Affordable Care Act. And that's what made me do what I did. This is a new one, and I dare say you can expect to see it deployed by any number of Republicans once they are outed as being skeevy, nasty perv merchants. Hey, just my guess. He's running for re-election. Uh-huh. And his district is, shall we say, heavily gerrymandered to favor him. A local IT worker by the name of Drew McGinty is running against him. He's running for the Democratic nomination in the 7th Congressional District of Pennsylvania. He issued a statement. Wait a sec. Nope, that sneeze isn't going to happen. Meehan was voted in to advocate for the best interests of the 7th District, Drew McGinty said, but instead used his power to personally and financially attack a staffer. His actions are appalling, and today I'm calling on Meehan to immediately resign from Congress. That was the statement that Drew McGinty made to Think Progress. I mean, this is further afield even than the late, great Flip Wilson's The Devil Made Me Do It. But is it a surprise? I should think not. All right, Earther pointing out, it sounds like when Newt Gingrich cheated on his wife because he loved America so much. Yes, as a matter of fact, it does. And what a pity there was no Affordable Care Act back then. He may have blamed it for serving divorce papers on his cancer-stricken wife. Hung Like Jesus wants to know, what does the hockey puck thing mean? It means that we all have a hockey puck, and we stick it in our mouth, and we bite down on it, and we run duct tape around our heads so as to not scare the neighbors when we begin screaming at the madness of it all. And instead we just... Right. Yeah, hockey puck. It's a thing that we do here. Randy in PA wants to know, no mention of the tsunami alert for the entire west coast of the U.S. that occurred at 4:30 a.m. this morning? Well, no, because it didn't come to anything. There was a significant earthquake off of Kodiak Island, 7.9 magnitude quake. It was originally thought to be an 8.2, and that's what triggered the tsunami warning, but the tsunami didn't happen. Good, mercifully, thankfully. So now it has been mentioned. All right, let's run over and check in and see what's up with Jim. What's on Jim's mind? Hey, Jim.
Good evening.
How are you?
Well, my parole officer has issued a new edict.
Really?
I've had to change my name. So my new name is Will Be Good.
I got a feeling that's not going to fool your parole officer for a minute. And heck, I didn't even know you had one.
Well,
that poor soul. Does your parole officer know about the bong with the stirrups and the aquarium pump, Jim? Have you gotten that far?
Yeah, we've had a complete confession. True, true, true. Well, how are you tonight?
I'd say just fine, but I'm not fine. There's something deeply disconcerting about living in a country that is just complacent about children getting massacred for trying to get an education. But apart from that, you know, how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln?
That's pretty bad, I can tell you that. But, you know, it happens so often, we've become inured to it almost, really. I mean, welcome to, I don't know what you want to call it, Dodge City, Christian Lock, whatever. I don't know. You know, I was listening to you last night, and I was listening to Mike Malloy last night, too, and you both brought something to the fore in my own mind about this country. And I don't mean to be, the two schools about this. One is a survivalist, and the other is a desolationist. And as far as this country is concerned, I've enrolled in the latter school. I don't think that there is a whole lot of good coming from this country. And if you'll let me explain, I'll tell you why.
Go right ahead.
In 2018, if people expect any big turnover in the Congress, forget it. It ain't going to happen. Because these people have the money, they have the base, they have this some type of, belief in their own system of what America should be, cast in their own image, that they want it to continue, and Trump will continue to be their everlasting hero. They love it.
Well, yeah, they do. I mean, that goes back to what I was talking about with regard to Stormy Daniels. The guy, I mean, these are the same people that had kittens with crocheted tails over a stained blue dress and some fellatio in the 90s. But, I guess if he got you, having a straight-up sexy time affair with a porn star, no biggie.
Well, remember what you told me when I reacted to you last year? And discussed about his thing about grabbing by the pussy.
Oh, yes.
And you said, Jim, that's just going to make him look better in their own eyes.
Because he knows how to go after what he wants, and he knows how to keep a woman in her place.
That's right. He sure can. He knows how to do it. And did you by any chance look up that thing about something on Barstool last night that was internet?
No, I didn't.
Guy with that big red truck?
No, I didn't. I didn't quite understand the message.
Well, it was all on Facebook, and I put it on my Facebook account. There's a guy with a big bright red truck, beautiful red truck with those things that you put tools in the back, and across one side of it was grabbing by the pussy. And then on the back of the truck was Fuck 'em Trump. And on the other side, I wanted to fuck her, but she was married. And this was not Photoshopped. This was a real red vehicle parked in a parking lot, and you could see the shadow of the guy taking the picture as he circumvented the truck, or went around the truck.
Any idea where this was? If you say West Virginia, I'm probably going to cry.
No, I know. It is just the same. But anyway, it was it just popped up on my news feed. And when I saw it, I couldn't believe it. And I said, this has got to be some kind of joke or whatever. And the license plate was something like RTX 666.
Only in America, right?
Yeah. I mean, I thought, I can't believe this. And I thought to myself, yeah, Jim, you sure as hell can. Because it's here, and it's there, and it's going to be around.
Well, there's not much in the way of madness that you could run past me that I wouldn't initially believe. Now, some of the stuff, you read it with an eye toward veracity, and it'll give itself away. But these Trump pansies, they've got the bit in their teeth, and the sky is the limit. The future belongs to them, Jim. The future belongs to them.
That's right. As a matter of fact, on TV right now, there's a big shot of the 1936 Olympics, and you know who is opening the games right on TV as we speak.
Are you watching Contact?
No, I'm watching American History Channel.
Oh, okay, because that features in the movie Contact. Yeah, okay.
American History Channel, and, you know, they're going on about that particular government and the guy who brought it into being, and there they are over at the Olympic venue just glorifying his regime. And it's become something, you know, this stuff, people are getting to like it. They're being to say, well, you know, this guy had something after all. And, well, maybe he was right. And, you know, that's, in my opinion, is part of the engine that's driving this train.
Well, you might find it interesting, because this runs in tandem with what you're talking about. For the year 2017, Michael Harriet writes over at The Root, for the year 2017, the award for domestic extremists of the year goes to racist white people. 71% of all extremist-related deaths in the U.S. last year were perpetrated by right-wing white people. There were 34 extremist-related murders, and 18 of them were committed by white supremacists. With everybody else pretty much following a distant second, third, fourth, whatever.
Well, you know, these people have in their own minds one set of instructions or one algorithm or one means of a conflict resolution. And that is violence. And that's exactly what they're doing. And it's a bad, bad situation. And who was that guy that you were talking about earlier? The phone messed me up. I couldn't hear about the senator or this congressman who was talking about picking on the people he liked the most.
Oh, that was me in Pennsylvania just a couple of minutes ago, right, yeah.
Oh, good Lord. And he'll probably be reelected,
and
right?
It's Obamacare's fault. He wouldn't have done it except for all the pressure he was under because people didn't want him voting to take their health care away.
Well, excuse me just a second. Could you cut the heat up, please? Yeah. Just a second, Bob.
Sorry.
Yeah, it is. I'm sorry, Bob. Just one second here. But anyway, he will be reelected, and under an excuse like that, because Obamacare was driving nuts,
That's what he's arguing.
I can't believe this. I mean, somebody who would. I can't believe that somebody would actually have a nerve to say something like that.
You can go to the Philadelphia Inquirer and read the article.
I have no doubt. I believe anything. And as you go through the news feed on Facebook, there's an increasing frequency of pray for Obama. I mean, pray for Trump. Lionizing him for everything he does.
Well, okay, so here we go. I was going to save this for prayer meeting Wednesday, but let's go ahead and put it out there. So with the Stormy Daniels news that and what we know, Jesus, it's just such a sleazy story, you know.
She's performing in South Carolina. It was last night.
Oh, yeah, she's, what is it, Make America? She's on her Make America Horny Again tour.
I saw that. I couldn't believe it. I said, only in South Carolina. But that's not true everywhere.
So, I mean, we're not going to rehash the details, but there's not enough brain bleach out there to wash the, you know, hey, you were fabulous. You remind me of my daughter. You know, whoa. Uncle Daddy! But, so, Isaac Dovera, reporter with Politico, caught up with the president of the Family Research Council. That would be Tony Norman.
No.
Yes, Mother Bates. Perkins.
Oh, Perkins. Oh, dear God.
And asked him about Stormy Daniels and the $130,000 in hush money. And he said, and you know, understanding that Trump denies it, Isaac Dovera, the reporter, said, if it turns out to be true, and Tony Norman, yes, Mother Bates, Perkins, responded, I would not...
You're too much sometimes. I swear you are.
Well,
please go ahead.
He responded, I would not say it's not a problem. Again, this election, evangelicals did not vote for Donald Trump based on his moral qualifications, but based upon what he said he was going to do and who he surrounded himself with. You know, like a guy who had an arrest warrant out for him in Hungary. You know, Sebastian Gorka, just saying.
Right.
I mean, how do you get a job in the White House with an arrest warrant out for you on a weapons charge in Hungary?
You don't. You shouldn't be able
well,
to.
Well, he did.
He did. I know.
And, of course, he wasn't subject to any sort of senatorial confirmation, but if he had been, Mitch McConnell would have said, let him through And you know, people like Bob Corker in Tennessee and Jeff Flake in Arizona would have voted aye and then gone out and issued a Parthian shot or something. But anyway, he said we kind of get Perkins did. We kind of gave him, all right, you get a mulligan, you get a do over here.
Give him a pass.
The president is not the pastor in chief. I do believe he needs to be a moral leader. With the exception of the way the president's gotten into some things and grabbed some things, and gotten into these spats, the president is providing the leadership we need at this time. The president has not done anything. Believe me, if the president had done anything immoral, the media would be all over it. And he'd call it fake news. Here's the fun part, though. Here's the fun part. This is where if there was a real live deity up there with a handful of lightning bolts, Tony Perkins would be deader than a resident of the Bates fucking motel. He said he tweeted back on November 15th, 2011. Tony did. Do we really believe lionizing porn stars and normalizing pornography won't tragically impact how they, these children, view women slash sexuality. It's the women slash sexuality that makes it art. So that's 2011.
He really said that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's still there. He hasn't scrubbed his timeline or anything.
Okay, I'm sorry. I just want to be sure I heard you clearly.
Yeah. Then there was 2009. And he was upset about, of course, Democratic politicians who didn't meet his own personal standard of highfalutin hallelujah morality. And interviewed on MSNBC, he said, if you're going to champion those issues, you've got to live by a higher standard. I think all public servants to be faithful to their vows of marriage. I can't imagine why voters would think politicians would be faithful to them if they're not faithful to their spouse. And again, another lightning bolt. Zzz! But, you know.
I've forgotten all these things that he said. I can't keep track of what these people say because it makes me just kind of crazy.
I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. I mean, it's like the thing I was talking about last night with Franklin Graham. Well, how do you feel about the Stormy Daniels thing? Well, all presidents are sinners. I prayed for Obama, too.
Yeah, I'm sure he did.
And I'm sorry. My twisted mind, Jim, cannot even come up with a mental image of Barack Obama rutting on Mayella. Okay? It just can't.
No, not at all.
And
I mean, you want to talk about a family man.
Yeah, I don't know. We don't know what melanoma has said to Dirty Donnie, or if she said anything at all, or if maybe she looked at him and said, "Well, is someone else giving me some relief?" Good.
Or it's like what Martin Bormann's wife said about him. Oh, well, he has enough for everybody. And that's the keeper. That's in the history book.
Yeah, that's creepy as shit. But it,
I think it is.
But you know, now melanoma's not going off to Davos with Dirty Donnie. And that's and you know that's causing the wags and the gossips to go crazy, you know. Maybe look, I'll be a little generous here. Maybe she's not going to Davos because the little boy has to go to school, and maybe needs his mama.
It could be. You know, I just wonder how that young man is being affected by all this. I'm just wondering what type of grown-up or older person he's going to be after going through all this stuff. Can you imagine what the life in that household must have been like, or what it is like, with a crazy father like that who is zero this minute and one the next and back and forth?
Yeah,
I mean, he has everything in the world as far as riches are concerned and opportunities, but I just wonder how that's going to affect him. Because, you know, he's not a bad-looking kid, and he looks like he could probably grow up to be an extremely handsome man. But what in the world is going to be in that boy's head? I mean, I'm not worried about it 24/7. No, I'm not. But I was just thinking about it over the past second or two.
You know, I was thinking about something the other night, Jim, kind of along these lines. You know, I'm not joking when I say that I think that there's a distinct possibility that Trump picked up syphilis somewhere along the way.
Oh, I believe you. I believe you're right.
And I watched a movie the other night, and I don't want to give anything. Well, you know, what the hell? It's been out for a while. I watched Meryl Streep and Hugh Grant in a movie simply titled Florence Foster Jenkins.
I've not seen that, Bob.
It's a lovely little film. And there are... And there's a... I'm going to ruin... Well, look, I mean, if you look her up on Wikipedia, you're going to find out anyway for her bio.
That's odd.
She had syphilis. And she is... Her recording at the Carnegie Hall Museum is the most requested recording in their entire library.
Really?
She sang once at Carnegie Hall. And she was awful. She was terrible. Delightfully so. And she was a grand dame of the music scene in early 20th century New York.
Now, what is her name? I'm sorry.
Florence Foster Jenkins.
Okay, I'm sorry. Excuse me.
I'm frankly gobsmacked that you don't know who I'm talking about.
I just didn't hear
this
it, Bob.
This is in your wheelhouse. But there's a scene where the doctor asks her, and it's true. This part of it is true. When did you get syphilis? When did you contract syphilis? And she answers, on my wedding night.
Oh, dear Lord.
And, of course, for the time period, she was treated with, oh, my God, arsenic and mercury.
Yeah, that's what they use.
And she was, it probably impacted her. Her mental status.
Of course it would.
But because she literally got syphilis when she lost her virginity. And she never had sex again. Never had children. Nothing.
I don't know what to say to that, Bob.
It's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. But because of the world in which we live, you know, Agnes and I are watching that movie, and I look at her and I said, now compare that with the guy in the White House. He has fucked anything that would stand still long enough and some that didn't.
True.
And there is, I mean, the odds of getting syphilis the first time you ever even have sex, I mean, that's one of those where you look at the universe and go, you hate me, don't you? But she bore up under it. Now, compare that with a guy who has had all the unprotected sex that Donald Trump has had. How's it not possible?
I don't know. I don't know in the world. Now, he had his sexual Vietnam in the 90s, correct?
That's what he described it as.
And this was well after we were into the AIDS epidemic.
And well and after people, we were preaching safe sex and everybody got to use a condom, yes.
Yeah, I mean, people in, I mean, he lived in New York City, and New York City was one of the hardest places hit after San Francisco, or they both were about the same. And he would go out and put himself at risk like that just for a piece of ass or not using a condom.
Apparently the vernacular for it is he raw dogged Stormy Daniels. He's a manly man. Yeah, he had unprotected, unsafe sex. And he, he's the kind of guy, who, oh, no, I can't use a condom, you know, because it's some sort of an affront to his manhood.
I see. You taught me one tonight, Bob. You have.
Raw dog?
Uh-huh. I thought I knew them all. Thank you. I appreciate it. You've added to my vocabulary.
Oh, you're more than welcome. I only picked it up via Twitter,
Raw dog.
Raw dog.
I mean, that is so romantic. It is just so feeling is, and
okay, so guess who some okay, here's somebody who absolutely adored Florence Foster Jenkins. This will pique your interest. Cole Porter.
Now that name comes, it comes back. I'm sorry. Now I know who you're talking about.
Tallulah Bankhead went to her recitals.
Yes. I don't know where my mind has been lately. I've had some problems with my own business. As you can well attest, I've not been at the top of my game. I'm sorry.
Oh, I think you're. I think you're still delivering a pretty blistering serve. I haven't broken serve on you yet.
Thank you.
Let me ask you a question that just got put to me. Does it ever puzzle you why Trump only goes after Slavic women?
After
Slavic women.
Yeah, it has. I've wondered about that.
Well, I mean, if you accept Marla Maples from the list.
Well, I mean, you know, he must have had a slip up. What can we say? I don't know.
I mean, why was he such a? You got to. The Russians knew he was an easy mark. That he was a sucker for a blonde Slavic woman. And that's how Miss Universe winds up in Moscow.
It all fits, doesn't it? I don't know. Are they supposedly submissive? Are they supposedly more vulnerable? Or maybe she was attracted to the things that he could offer her in terms of wealth, position, power, business opportunity? I don't know. But I can tell you one thing right now. If I were a woman, now, and if no fact begins with this, and I'm just basing this upon my own situation, and I don't want you to be offended by this.
I'll try not.
But this is how I feel. I wouldn't suck Donald Trump's dick if I was drowning and he had oxygen in his balls.
Wait a minute. You get a nice long jingle for that, Jim.
Well, I shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry if you're offended if I did. But that's just the way I feel about that man. He has as much sex appeal as a tree trunk. And I'm sure he probably found a knot hole in one of them.
Well, I was going to say, careful about them tree trunks. If it ain't moving. Yeah. Yeah.
But going back to his wife, that's the only thing I can say about about her.
Is it? I mean, would he use the leverage of coming to America? Is it a power thing? Is that what?
And he'd use anything he could, Bob. That man has no morals. He has no conscience. He doesn't care what he does. And, you know, I'll tell you one thing right now. I would not put him above having some of his friends and one of the families around the boroughs if he got upset enough to have them all of a sudden disappear.
Oh, it's damn. I don't know if curious is even the word, Jim, but yeah. So to get it to maybe try to drive the train the program back out of the gutter. What do you make of the little interview that Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third just happened to sit down, too, with Bob Mueller.
Bob, you're going to have to give me a pass on that one. Please enthrall me with your acumen. That's one of the reasons I listen to the show, is to learn stuff.
Well, I mean, that was just a piece of breaking news that it turns out, and it's got to make it. I don't know necessarily if Trump's legal team knows this or how much information's passed around, but the Attorney General of the United States of America, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third, he had a little tete-a-tete interview with Robert Mueller, and it wasn't over the window treatments there in Mueller's office either.
I see.
It was an interview related to Mueller's work, and that's got to mention made in the news stories. He wasn't under oath. Well, see, I looked at that and I thought, well, that's supposed to put him at ease or somebody at ease. But the fact of the matter is, you don't have to be under oath the way I understand it. Now, maybe Steve in New York or Billable Rick or somebody has a take on this. But you don't have to be under oath to be busted for lying to the FBI now, do you?
Well, my understanding is they can come to you and they can ask you questions. And if you agree to talk with them, then you are effectively under oath. And they will tell you that. And they will tell you that you can be convicted for perjury if you lie. If not, you will tell them, I don't have anything to say. Now, that's my understanding of the law.
Well, and my understanding of it, though, is when the FBI shows up, even if they don't put you under oath, there is a separate statute called lying to the FBI.
I'm not familiar with that. I thought, you know,
you do not have to be. You do not have to be under oath.
Well, then, of course, it is, you automatically go into default by not saying anything to them once they identify themselves.
Right. I mean, if the FBI shows up and asks you if you know who killed Cock Robin, and you do, and you say you don't.
As for me, if the FBI came to me and started talking to me, I would just say, look, I don't have anything to say to you. The only person I have to say anything to is my attorney. That's the only thing I would say to them. And that would be the safest way to take that particular conversation. Because the FBI can be, well, they can be pretty persuasive.
Mueller's team has also talked to Jim Comey now, and they're saying that they want to talk to Donald Trump in the next month. And that has got to be giving his legal team a case of the dribbling squirts.
Sure it does, because either way, he has no way out.
Well, no, it's not just that, Jim. It's the fact that if you start Trump talking, I mean, go look at the Wall Street Journal interview. Look at anything he's done with the New York Times. He can't shut up, and he can't resist extemporizing. And when he starts extemporizing, he makes shit up.
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing about him. The guy is so goddamn crazy and stupid. He is a one entity biosphere. He is the only thing in it. Nothing else makes any difference to anything him. And therefore, that's just the way he is. And he can't consider anybody else but himself. And maybe that's part of it. I don't know.
Well, apparently, this has something. The relative, or the relevant passage is 18 U.S.C. section 1001.
I've heard of that.
Writing about it over at findlaw.com, Solomon Weisenberg, who apparently has some experience in the field, says, what do Martha Stewart and enemy combatant Ali Salakala Al-Mari have in common? They were both indicted under Title 18 U.S. Code Section 1001 for lying to federal government agents.
Mm-hmm.
Even if your lie is oral and not under oath, even if you have received no warnings of any kind, even if you're not trying to cheat the government out of money, even if the government is not actually misled by your falsehood, it's a crime under 18 U.S.C. Section 1001.
You know, it's really funny. I wrote her a letter of sympathy when she was in prison here at Alderson, because I felt sorry for her. I really did. And the reply I got was from her publicist saying that she refused to accept any type of correspondence and for me not to write her anymore.
Well, I'll be damned.
You know, I felt sorry for her because she was a woman, and I've always liked Martha Stewart. I know she can be a bitch, but she's very good at what she does. And, you know, I say, there by the grace of God go I. And I was just trying to, you know, I can imagine her being dragged out of the Hamptons into Alderson, West Virginia. And I just wrote her a letter of sympathy and told her how I thought that she had been badly treated and hoped that this time would pass quickly. And I received this nasty letter from that publicist. And I couldn't believe it. I said, well, I tried. I mean, you know, I have a lot of compassion for people, Bob.
I know you do.
I mean, I know I appear so damn like crazy most of the time. But I do have a lot of deep sympathy and feelings for people. I really do.
I know. Well, the fact of the matter is, if the high dollar pettifoggers that Trump has hired, there can't be a one of them that's getting a decent night's sleep if he thinks about Trump sitting down to talk to the FBI.
What are they going to do?
Because the
duct tape over his mouth. That's about the only thing you can do.
Well, I mean, they're in a spot. They can't say no.
Well,
if they say no, he's screwed. If they say yes, he's screwed. It's a question of who's going to do the screwing. If they say no, Mueller with the information that he's already gathered will put the wood to him. If they say yes, once we get past, are you Donald J. Trump? And he says yes, well, then the cat's out of the bag, Jim. And he's off, and we're off to the races.
And as they say in the Big Easy, they say ballpark roulette.
Exactly, and it is that time of year again. Lent comes early mm-hmm. this year, apparently.
Sure do. Well, he's in a pickle. That's all I can say. He's in a real big pickle.
Well, and the thing is, if you're his lawyers, particularly if you are his personal counsel, this is the one where you sit down and you type out the letter to your malpractice insurance carrier saying, ain't nothing good going to come of this, and I don't know what I was thinking when I took the case. Because there's
good
no...
Good luck on getting that
I
one.
Mean, there's no way... this is not, you know... In the past, you know, he hired Roy Cohn. He hired Roy Cohn to fight a fight that he didn't even need to fight. He could have just entered into a consent decree and it would have been over. But instead, they turned it into Roy Cohn turned it into a circus and a conflagration.
That was Roy Cohn's MO. You know how Roy Cohn's
right,
boy.
But that wound up being worse for his client than it would have been to have just shut up and settled the case. Well, this ain't that. You know, this is not him threatening to sue somebody. You know, somebody threatening to sue Rosie O'Donnell and getting some well-paid hack to send a nasty gram, a cease and desist letter. This is not that. Robert Mueller is not going to be scared away. You can't sue Robert Mueller into submission, and that's part of why this whole. The traitorous little bastards over in the House, the Republicans, are trying to gin up this little private war against the FBI. And again, I'm not a fan of the FBI. I know how much wickedness the FBI can be capable of. You hope that they have changed since the days when they were writing letters telling Dr. King to kill himself.
No, sir.
You hope they've changed. But you don't necessarily know they have.
Yes, sir. You're right, sir.
And so, Mueller is said to be above reproach. You know, he's Caesar's wife in all of this. But the House is doing, people like Devin Nunes are doing everything in their power to try to smear the FBI until such time as they want the FBI to do their dirty work.
I'll ask you something about the FBI if we can, since we're talking here. Do you have a minute or two?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't have any particular expertise, but I'll do my best.
Well, it's just, did you ever watch that movie I told you about called Breach?
Yes.
About Robert Hansen?
Right, yeah, I did.
How in the hell could that man have gotten away with the stuff that he did over a period of, what, 15 to 16 years, cost the lives of I don't know how many people, has exposed enough classified material of the United States government that they still will not even talk about disclosing it today? I mean, Oliver Shades, it was money. I mean, that
well, but ask yourself, you know, how did the Profumo affair come about in Great Britain?
Well, it's because of a sex party at a pool at Lady Astor's house.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, how can in the world could they have let him get away with that? Because you would think that they would be the masters of discovery and revelation and conviction, that they had to assign finally a special task force of which they made him the head to pull out the mole.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, people think of these institutions of government and how infallible they are and how irreproachable they are and how great they are. But I'm afraid that's not quite so.
You know, there's always some element of weird. Like the fact that in Hansen's case, they were supposed to be this close-knit family, blah, blah, blah. And then,
oh, yeah.
And then it turns out that he's having a buddy and neighbor watch him and his wife.
Sex tapes of him and his wife fucking, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I've often wanted to call that attorney Eric, what's his name in D.C., and talk to him, but he would not talk to me. But that movie just fascinated me. It really did. It was a good film. It was well done. Ryan Phillippe did a great job in being his servant, as it were.
By the way, Scott and Punky informed me that even Roger Stone thinks that Trump talking to Mueller is crazy, calling it a death wish and a perjury trap.
Well, it's not
going to be a perjury trap because they're not going to put him under oath as a matter of courtesy. It'll just be an 18 U.S.C. 1001 trap. The man has lied on the order of 2,400 times in 365 days. That's eight lies a day. How many lies? I mean, he can't help it. See, this is part of my assertion about the lack of mental competence on his part. And you watch, if the shit does eventually hit the fan, this will be pled. He is mentally incompetent and he does not know the difference between the truth and a lie, and never has.
He knows.
Yeah, but watch that be a defense.
Yeah. I know, but he knows what he's doing. That old fox, but he's not an old fox. He's nothing but an old reprobate and a chiseler, and he's done nothing all of his life but defraud people, take every dishonest way he can to employ people like Roy Cohn, who could and was known for, he didn't even bother to bend the law. He just fucking broke it. And you see what happened to Roy Cohn's client a guy named Joe McCarthy. Well, eventually, these chickens come home to roost.
Yeah. By the way, providing a little bit of more depth for us, Steve from New York writes, in this case, I don't think it matters here. This was an effort to confirm or disconfirm, that's a Lebowski-ism, what they already have. In addition, I can hear anyone saying to the White House when they make the point to say Sessions wasn't under oath, why does it matter? Do you plan on lying? If Sessions did lie, they'll know it. If Sessions didn't lie, they'll know. Either way, they'll confront Beauregard. Whether he's under oath will be moot anyway.
So they plan to have a conversation with Mr. Sessions?
Oh, they've already had it.
Do you know the context in a brief nutshell of what the contents are?
No, no one knows what the contents were, but it has leaked that that conversation has been had.
Well, even in spite of Sessions' efforts to recuse himself, would that have any effect on this?
Yeah, who knows?
You're a scholar of the law, not me.
I'm not
trying to put you on the spot.
No. I simply don't know. I don't know. And frankly, nobody knows. And anybody who tells you they know what's going on inside Mueller's investigation is probably lying.
That's true.
I mean, there are some good guesses that can be made. And, you know, you watch the news channels and they'll bring on people who had 25-year careers as assistant U.S. attorneys and whatnot. And they'll make a pretty educated guess about it. But no one can know.
When is this supposed to take place? Do you know? Have you any idea?
The as far as the Trump interview is concerned...
Beauregard.
I don't have it in front of me, but it has already happened.
All right, and the storm of Trump is to be held.
They say they want it within the month. And they're sleazy pettifog and gut bags, and they're the kinds who make bajillions of dollars doing this sort of thing in Washington D.C. And there's that on the who gives a damn side.
Well, yeah,
but
Bobby,
I feel honest to God, this is as close to sympathy as you're ever going to hear me. I feel sorry for anybody who tries to take on Donald J. Trump as a client.
Well, excuse me. Number one, as far as Sessions is concerned, I was under the impression that they had a second interview with him.
Well, no, I mean...
I thought there was another one to come.
Maybe I missed that. Of course, they can always invite him back should they feel like they need to.
Well, maybe that's it. I thought that there was a secondary interview that was scheduled. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to mislead, but I just thought that. As I told you, I have not been at the top of my game, but maybe so, maybe not. But, yeah, I agree with you. I wouldn't have Donald Trump as a client any more than I would, oh, hell, I shouldn't have Satan as a client.
Satan's wily. You've got a fighting chance if you've got the Prince of Darkness as a client. In this case, though, if you've got Trump, you've got the Prince of Doofus. I mean, there's an old joke about how does it go? What's the difference between? It had an ethnic component to it, but what's the difference between the traditional mafia and the new mafia?
Not a whole lot. The new mafia will give you up for everything.
No, the old mafia gives you an offer you can't refuse. The new mafia gives you an answer you can't. It gives you an offer you can't understand.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And that's this bunch. Again, he's just a. You used the perfect word. He's a chiseler. And he is way out of his depth. And everybody has to know it. And if you're that old racist John Kelly, for instance, you have got to be tiptoeing around him to make sure that you don't get any of his shit on your shoes.
I hate to say it, Mr. I don't care what Mr. Kelly's shoes are made of. I don't care what kind of plastic covering he's got over his shoes, but he's smeared right up to his ankles in shit with Donald Trump.
And they've taken, people inside the White House have taken to referring to Kelly as the church lady. Remember the old Dana Carvey character from Saturday Night Live?
Oh, yeah.
They call him, because he's so straight-laced about trying to keep order around Trump.
Oh, yeah.
And that's, you know, that's the thing. Trump's tweets are statements of fact or statements of alleged fact.
I know we're running up on 9 o'clock, but excuse me, I'm sorry. This business of him tweeting, why would any man, any who has a reasonable, a modicum degree of sanity, be using Twitter as a means of expressing his opinions? I mean, he gets, what's he up, laying up there, storping up these fast foods and stuff like that, and he tweets out at any hour of the day and night, he reacts with no guidance, no advice. I mean, to me, that tells you right then and there, he's just fucking crazy. I mean, I know we talked about him saying, oh, I can shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue. No, it bothered me. Well, okay. To you, that was not a sign of insanity. To me, it was. But for him to be doing shit like this over and over and over again, I mean, how many tweets has that son of a bitch transmitted since he's been in the White House? 1,000? 2,000? I've forgotten the number. I heard it the other day.
Oh, it's some insane. But see, there's a going theory.
When you are the most powerful man in the world, you don't tweet. You don't do that. If you have any sense, you just don't do it. It is not the kind of government that I work for.
But there's nobody that can tell him no. Everybody has to baby him. There was a story the other day about Kellyanne Conway. When he's getting ready to do something mean, stupid, and vindictive, she'll say to him, well, that's a very small thing, and you're bigger than that. She's talking to him. She's talking to him like he's sitting in a fucking high chair having just dumped out a bowl of dried Cheerios on the tray.
And guess what? The baby has just reached through his diaper, and he's hurled a load of shit at her. I hear she's on the chopping block.
Everybody is.
But, I mean, you know, she's one of his closest confidants. And now, hell, I don't think even Joseph Stalin was that damn crazy. I mean, he was renowned for how he treated his confidants. I mean, one day you were okay, and the next day you were in the cellars of the Lubyanka with a revolver fixing to explode into your brain. That's how I feel about him. Bob, it's gotten to the point that, you know, I'm on Facebook a lot because I'm home and stuff like that, and it's, you know, all these things are, they keep me in touch with the world because I can't go out right now. And I pay a lot of attention to what is being said and this, that, and the other. And when I see some of the stuff that's coming across in the news feed and, of course, in the news, and when you post one point of news, like, you know, CNN to FOX, I just wonder where in the hell is this country going? And I can tell you what's going. And it's what I said at the beginning of our conversation. It is going to a one-party autocracy. driven by theocrats and bureaucrats and financial autocrats, and that's where it's going. I don't give the Democratic Party more than 3 years to even, if it lasts that long. I believe it's going to fall completely apart. I really do. And there's going to be a one-party system in this country, and if you have the means, if you are able, if you are young enough, if you are capable of leaving my advice, and God knows I wish I were 20 or 30 years younger, I would be on my way out of this country so fast, it would not, you wouldn't even, I would be like a zephyr. I really would. That's what, and I'm not trying to be this horrible desolationist, but Mike Malloy said it himself last night. And I put a great deal of store by what Mike Malloy says. I really do. I respect that man a lot.
He's the wisest man doing radio on this. Well, he's the wisest man doing radio, period.
He is. I listen to him every night religiously. And I listen to you every night religiously, believe it or not. And I do have a great deal of respect for both of you guys. I really do. And I appreciate your putting up with me and my weird sense of humor. Tell Murphy I said hey.
Yeah, I certainly will. Hey, Jim, we got to get out of here because it is right up against the top of the hour, but it's been a good conversation, and I thank you for it.
Well, I enjoy you, and I appreciate you, okay?
All right, thanks, Jim. You take care. The weather's going to be getting cooler again, so be warm.
We'll try.
All right. Take care.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Now. That's our buddy Jim, not too awfully far from here. You know, Jim's got a lifetime of experience working in government, and a whole bunch of it in Washington, D.C., and he has a treasure trove of understanding of how bureaucracies function. So he said he learned something new. I often learn something new from Jim too. All right then. I'm trying to get us to the point where we can start having fundraising free radio. We only had $210 to go tonight, and we've still got $210 to go. But that's okay. We'll try it again tomorrow night. We're going to have us some fundraising free radio or bust in the process. Well, there ain't going to be any busting. But anyway, thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time on this little planet engaging in this conversation. Thank you so much. It's a joy to be associated with you. It really is. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to Asa for keeping head on.live up and running and the other stream up and running while we sort out as we sort out other issues. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.